When you're not consistently building external relationships and working on recruiting, what happens is you don't have the ability to recruit selectively. You recruit desperately, you know, and you feel like I've got to get this person. And that's when you venture from your values and you venture from who you define you really want. Because at that point, you want loans and you want production. And when you start chasing loans and production, you know, you're not building the team that you want to build, really. Yeah.
Recruiting isn't just about filling seats. It's about alignment, leadership, and most importantly, trust. In this episode, we're going to break down how Tom Mills scaled entire regions and what most companies get wrong when they try to grow too fast. For the next episode of Lending Leadership with the Mortgage Pros, I'm Robert Filyaw and Tom Mills. What's up, Millsy? How are you?
What's up, bud? How are you, man? Welcome back.
Good, man. Back from a few weeks in Europe. Italy is amazing. Highly recommend if you guys haven't been, go give it a whirl. Ready to tackle 2026.
Yeah, this is our first one of 2026. We've been a full year on the podcast now.
I know, it's crazy to think, right? Out of our comfort zone a little bit. We've covered some awesome topics. I think we've built a little bit of a following, which is something that I think maybe surprises us a little bit. People actually listen to us.
Oh, wow. Imagine that.
So listen, man, you know, we're doing this blueprint series and you're kind of in the hot seat now, and we're going to focus a lot today talking about your role and, you know, what probably most importantly, how that role factored into recruiting and building and growing, which is something that's so vital in our industry. Honestly, if you're not growing, you're dying. Right. And especially in the landscape that we're in, but frankly, you and I agree on this. So many people just screw it up. They get it completely wrong. They don't come from the right foundation with it. And you know, it leads to this kind of cyclic, constant revolving door where it's not relational. It's almost transactional. Yeah. And it's a problem in our industry. So we're going to dive into all of that. I'm really excited to get chatting with you about it. You know, take us back a little bit. You were an RVP at a large national company. What does that mean? What does that look like on a day to day? How does recruiting play into that? How does that factor into your role now? What takeaways, what lessons did you learn that kind of helps guide you in how you operate today?
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing, I originated up until 2009, I think it was. I'm sorry, 2011. When I moved out of that, I realized like I was in the mortgage business, but I then really was in the people business, you know. Mm-hmm. I every day of my career for the last 22 years, I've been in the mortgage business, but you know, for the last 10, 15 years of it, I've been in the people business. I've been in the business of managing relationships, understanding people, understanding how to bring value to people, and understanding how to create vision and really, you know, learn how to lead people towards meaningful change. And I think that's really what, you know, recruiting is. It's really leading people towards meaningful change. And, you know, what I learned is, you know, it's a long game. You know, it's different. The instant gratification's not there. You're going to be disappointed more. You have to build relationships. You know, I always say to people, I want to build a relationship first. I don't recruit anybody I don't have a relationship with. You know, I want to have a relationship with people that I work with. So let's focus on that. And, you know, hey, if along the way we determine that we align, that's awesome. I'll probably turn a different hat on and work to recruit you at that point. But, kind of looking at it from a different, you know, a different perspective. It kind of comes down to that, you know, servant leader and how do you become that? And really, how do you become, you know, how as a leader, I think in this industry, a lot of leaders have been forced to really reflect on that over the last couple of years is, you know, especially layers of management within organizations have been put under the microscope. Values have been questioned. You know, and there's two types of leaders in this business. You know, there's the leaders that I think that work on your business, and there's the leaders that work in your business. And I had removed myself a long time ago from that works within in the business. And to me, that means, you know, for my first 10 years of my career, I prided myself that like I knew every guideline, I could solve every complex scenario. And that's just how I chose to lead then. I realized that wasn't necessarily my highest and best use. And working on people's business, helping them, you know, with a vision, with growth, with execution, was more what I chose to focus on. So, you know, I think, you know, without, you know, as a leader in an organization, if you're not really strong in one or two of those areas, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, you touched on a couple of key points there. One thing that we've talked about endlessly for years is the lack of leadership, right? The relational leadership that's in the industry. So many quote unquote leaders out there really don't do bupkis, right? They don't lead. They don't have that personal relationship. They don't have a vested interest in partnering with you to help you grow and achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. You're frankly, in a lot of cases, you're just a payday to them. They're just fluff. And more so, they don't have a lot of power or authority to do things to help you grow your business and to move the needle. So
or knowledge or ability, you know.
Or knowledge or ability, right? Yeah. I know that's one of the things as you and I worked together that was pretty refreshing, is that, you know, if you said that you were going to get something done, if there was a problem that we had, if there was a challenge, if there was something we were trying to accomplish, you were right there lockstep and, you know, had the leadership, the knowledge, the experience to kind of drive through it and get to the other side. That's powerful. And it's frankly, it's missing in a lot of organizations today. So I think, you know, that's something that we've aligned with really well. I think it's a cornerstone to a lot of the success we've had in recruiting, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, as a leader, you know, you have to have values, right? You have to live by those values. And those, you know, the people that work with you, they're either going to come to really respect those values and know them and know consistency, or everything you do is going to put them in question every time, you know?
Well said.
So I think, you know, that's, you know, when I removed myself from working, you know, in the business, that didn't mean I removed myself from the trenches. That didn't mean I'm humble. I'm above that, you know, so that, you know, when you have to show up for people, sometimes it is just speed of response and it is taking quick action and saying, you know, when somebody's got a lot going on, saying, hey, I got this for you, I'll take care of this. You know, it's that servant leadership mentality, really.
Yeah. You know, I think as we talk about that, you know, it kind of goes to the root of your recruiting philosophy and really kind of how you build your avatar and having those values and knowing how you want to attract talent. Because, you know, you and I are both firm believers. We've spent hundreds of hours on this, right? So like we're really firm believers in the way you attract talent is going to determine the talent that you attract, right?
Yeah.
How do you define kind of good recruiting versus bad? What do you look at when you're evaluating maybe a branch or an LO? What's some non-negotiables that you have in your recruiting philosophies that you just won't compromise on? Talk to us about some of the meat and potatoes of that.
Yeah, let's start good recruiting versus bad. I would say shotgun versus sniper, you know, is how I really look at that. And in the earlier years of when I began recruiting and building teams, you had no choice but to shotgun approach it because the data wasn't really there and available. So, you know, your recruiting goals were tied to how many LOs you added. That's, I can tell you, I've removed, ever since data became available, that has not been a philosophy I had.
We don't have any number of how many LOs we want to
add.
Yeah,
that's a really bad place to be, is just trying to add LOs, feeling you have to add loan officers, and just feeling like, hey, if the numbers come in, the numbers come in. And that's, I think, the difference between, you know, what makes good and great teams. You know, everybody should not be a fit for every team. If you feel like your team is a fit for everybody, you're really truly a fit for nobody in my mind. Because, you know, you have to define who you are, who you work well with, the avatar of that individual, the qualities that you look for in them. You know, I think that's the most important thing. So, you know, I think that's the first thing I learned is, where do you begin? You know, and I think that's, you know, defining your candidate that you're going after, you know, what they look like. And I'm not talking about, you know, what they look like, you know, from, yeah. from, you know, what they look like from a, you know, their time in the business, their level of production, what they look like within their market, their community, if that matters to you. You know, some of the values that we look, we like to look for people that aren't looking to make a move, you know, people that, you know, build their business over a long period of time at places. So, you know, you can tell that, you know, they value relationships, are loyal. You know, that's not the person that every little challenge, they flock to the next place because the grass is greener. You know, and I think, you know, at in the earlier years, I would define it, and I found myself defining it more on production, thinking production means they do all these things. And that's not the case. You know, I remember I had an originator, a manager one time that, you know, a great guy, but just a bad leader, you know, like not a good leader of his people, you know, did really nothing. It's like, hey, what's it like to be on this person's team? Like, you know, there's no sales manager, there's no nothing. There's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's built for that originator that just wants to hang their license somewhere and not be messed with. And, you know, he asked me one time, like, you know, how come you've helped others recruit and you haven't helped me recruit? I'm like, look, man, when I find someone that says, I'm not looking for leadership, I don't want to be called, I don't want to show up to a meeting, I don't want to ever meet anybody in the company, I don't want to show my face, I don't make sales calls, I don't do this, I will do this, you know, you really have to think, like, you know, I said to him, I was like, if I find that person, I'm going to find them and I'm going to put them on your team because they're perfect for you. When you're not consistently building external relationships and working on recruiting, what happens is you don't have the ability to recruit selectively. You recruit desperately, you know, and you feel like I've got to get this person. And that's when you venture from your values and you venture from who you define you really want, because at that point you want loans and you want production. And when you start chasing loans and production, you know, you're not building the team that you want to build, really. Yeah.
It becomes transactional, and
yeah,
it's a, you know, more of a use relationship than an actual partnership. And we never see it end well, right? We've seen this. You said so much there. There's a lot to unpack, and you and I are so aligned in so much of this thought and philosophy. And I do think it's a big differentiator for us in the industry and sets us apart. We see so much of this transactional recruiting, right? We see stuff every day that kind of makes us scratch our head. We're just, it's almost like free agency, like just crazy money. Let me throw this and you're going to come here for 2 years, you know, and then at the end of that, we're going to negotiate another contract, hopefully to keep you. And mm-hmm. like, that's not a mindset or a world that you and I ever want to be in or live in. How do you think that, where do you think that's come from over time? Where do you think that trend is heading? Do you see it changing? If so, in what ways? Because we see a lot of this, right? And it's, we see people get the golden handcuffs put on them. They take the money, and then we talk to people that are 3 months, 4 months into some 2-year contract that they signed for some stupid amount of money that, frankly, in most cases wasn't warranted, and they're completely miserable.
Yeah. You know, I think in most cases, I hate where the business is going. The term free agency is the only really word I can think of to kind of explain it, because it's, you know, you literally have people signing for X term, receive X amount of money to stay on for X term, and sometimes in an abusive relationship, you know, in most cases, I would say the money you're being paid is half of what you're being overcharged, you know.
I would say in all cases.
Yeah. And what's interesting is you know, a lot of times it's a retention strategy now of organizations is to lock them back under contract when it was, you know, sometimes it wasn't money that led people to looking at other opportunities. It was other things, but then they're you know, the thing the company has to offer back is the money to stay. You know, look, I mean, we're not transactional here. We are very relational. You know, I take a lot of pride in the fact, and, you know, we had, you know, another 32 people join the organization yesterday, and that joined the organization yesterday with zero golden handcuffs. They could leave tomorrow. They could leave next month. There's no recourse. There's no legal action. There's no money that was paid to them. You know,
it aligns with their vision, with where they want to take their business, and they decided we're the right partners to help them get there. Great stuff here. I want to dig in a little bit about the process, right? And then move from the process to the actual onboarding, because so much of that is vital. And I think, honestly, I think right here, just the foundational piece and the philosophy of having your avatar and taking that sniper approach versus the shotgun and using the data that's out there and knowing who it is that you want to build the relationship with and going deep with those people and really using it as a filter to get rid of the noise and the people that aren't a fit. That may even be the most important, is filtering out those who aren't a fit, so you're not spending time on them.
Good thing, man.
Once you've identified those people that are the people you want to sow into, that you want to partner with, that you want to help grow and develop, what does that pipeline look like? What does the nurture phase? I know this is where I've screwed a lot up, because it's easy to get lost in the weeds there. So what does that look like, the steps? And then once you get the commitment and now you've decided to partner together, what does onboarding look like? What do you prioritize there? What are some missteps to be cautious of?
Yeah. Man, there's a lot of steps there, right? And I think the first thing is, you know, if you're a manager out there looking to recruit, or team lead looking to recruit, or company looking to recruit, you know, you really have to get across the organization an organizational commitment to that, because that's what I think it takes. It's not one person doesn't recruit people to a company. The more people you actually involve in that, the better chance, in my mind, you have of bringing that person into your family, because they gravitate towards people. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of those people become their lifeline. So building relationships there is really important. But, you know, ultimately, you know, when you as an organization commit to recruiting, it's leadership committing to their role in the process. It's committing HR and onboarding, you know, to really a refined process. Cause if you don't onboard people really well, you lose trust really fast, and you don't create good stories. You'll spend five times the time to earn someone's trust back, if you lose it, as if you just come in and kind of, you know, have a refined system that makes a lot of sense. That I totally sputtered that. You know, ultimately I look at everything like a sales funnel. You define your avatar, you define those fits that you have for your organization, for your branch. And at that point, they're just a lead, right? You know, I've learned along the way to try to, you know, find as much as you can about those leads. And since you're being, you know, more sniperish in your approach, you can invest a little time. Like you can invest a little time to learn more about them, understand some of their values, have some notes and some understanding around that. But ultimately, you know, it all starts with a conversation, you know, and I think you have to be open-minded to not thinking where, you know, you want to think it's conversation onto this, then we cover, you know, pricing, then we cover operations, then we make an offer. Like, that sounds like this perfect roadmap, right? I've learned to simplify that a little bit. Yes, you got to cover all those things. I've learned to simplify a little bit more and try to learn as much as I can about them and call one, and no other goal but to get them to move to a call two. You know,
almost the goal, like dating.
The goal of the call is always to move to a next call, to mutually feel like it's worth moving to a next call. You know, and it has to be genuine. It can't be forced, because again, I mean, we're reaching out to people that aren't dropping an application and waving their hand saying, hey, I'm out interviewing companies. You know, we're coming into their world to introduce, you know, us, and sometimes they know us, sometimes they don't. you know, so it's a commitment to a process of building a relationship, finding opportunities for alignment, to find out, is there meaningful change for this person that you can lead them towards? There's a million things that need to happen through that. People introductions, department introductions, you know, workflow walkthroughs, you know, really discussing, you know, letting them see your vision, your, you know, the whole nine yards. You've got to cover all those things. The way that happens doesn't matter. You know, I also believe, you know, while you're constantly moving to the next call, it doesn't mean you're kicking the can down the road. There's a point in time you need to get intentional about what it is that you're doing here, and that you feel like they're a fit, and that you'd like to take some steps towards, you know, towards them discovering if they mutually agree on that, and then outlaying those steps. And you know, I think a face to face is a really important part of that process at some point along the way.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think we've seen this work time and time again, right? Like it's kind of a tried and true, and, you know, probably more important than the onboardings. Don't get me wrong, that's super important. But more important is, to me, some of the examples that we can go back to on, you know, maybe when we get to that third call or that fourth call, and you find an impasse, you find a showstopper, and, you know, because you had your avatar and you have your core principles and philosophies, and you know who is a fit and what you're looking for, this is, you know, guys, this is very much a filter process. You're trying to make sure they're a fit for you as much as they're trying to make sure you're a fit for them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when you said something earlier, Tom, when you recruit consistently, you don't have to get desperate with it. You can get really selective, and that's a powerful place to be, because when you get to that third call and you find something that is a showstopper, you stop the show. You don't move forward because you know what you're looking
for. Hey, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, we look at that completely different, and that wouldn't be something that we would allow. And, you know, I know that's important to you, so I wanted to kind of lay it out there now. Or I think a lot of companies want to sweep that under the rug. Yep. And act like that elephant's not sitting in the room. It's in the room. Like, address it.
It's going to come up.
Because let me tell you something. When that elephant's in the room and you're on in the same company together, that elephant's a lot bigger and a lot louder. You know, I'd rather squash it there. Determine we're not a fit. And, you know, because you talk about the onboarding process. I mean, you know, you should pour a lot into that as an organization. And you know, really make sure that the people that you're onboarding are fit to your company. Because that's a lot of time and energy that's put towards them. That's deserved. They deserve that, that focus. But, you know, when we find that even before making an offer, it's important to say, hey, you know, I want to discuss an offer with you. Before we get into that, you know, set the stage for a call to go over the offer, but really talk through the transition and what that looks like. How detailed will it be? What steps are going to take? Because that seems very daunting, especially when your avatar is a top producer, like what we're going after. You've got, you know, the large pipelines, they have a lot of relationships, a lot of logistics and offices and signage. And, there's so many things going on, and, it seems daunting. So you have to start to make that transition look more clear, that roadmap look more clear to kind of lead them along it. And then your offer kind of come in and again, walk through that transition and what that looks like.
I love that. You know, it's so important that you paint the roadmap, because this is not something the targeted candidates that we're looking for, that we really want to build relationships with, are not people that move very consistently, right? So this is going to be outside of the norm for them. They're not going to, they're not the people that move every year or every 2 years, right? They've been in a company for 5, 6, 7 years. It may be their first move. So having that clear, concise roadmap to take away some of those anxieties. You know, one thing that I heard a long time ago, and it stuck with me, is people do not resist change. Everyone says, oh, no one wants change. Change is hard. Blah, blah. People don't resist change. People resist confusion. And when you don't have that clear roadmap, you have a lot of confusion. And then that is why they put the hesitation up. And I think when you have a clear roadmap and onboarding, and you really, it's your first, it's your first opportunity also to show them that you're the partner and you're going to guide them through this, right? And mm-hmm. and you're going to walk them through it, and they don't need to have the concerns. When you do that, it makes people a lot more open to taking that leap with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge commitment, an originator to make to change their alignment to a new organization. It's a huge commitment, and you know, it has to be handled delicately with care, thoughtfully, on a process that is proven successful. You know, that's what people are looking for. They, you know, and I think you have to have those stories created along the way. You know, I think to recruit well, you know, I mean, good luck to the companies that are losing people that just decide now they're going to go recruit, you know, because you have to be really attractive to recruits, which means you have to have a movement towards you. You have to have people coming on, and you have to create really good success stories. You have to create raving fans, because those next people you're kind of feeding through the pipeline, you want to encourage them to talk to those other people. Hey, reach out to such and such, you know, he's in Maine and joined us, you know, a couple of months ago. You know, I honestly, you know, I ask you to reach out and ask about his experience through the onboarding process, as that's a concern of yours. You have to have that, internal, you know, hype people, cheerleaders that believe in what you're doing, that, you know, those raving fans, like I said, that, or there's certainly going to be more skepticism around, you know, their move to your company, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, past always predicts future, and the vice versa is true also, right? Like, this is so important to nail, because, you know, if you don't, the opposite is true. And now you have disgruntledness that is going to be out there in the industry, or that people are going to hear. And, you know, we've seen, you know, overpromise, underdeliver time and time again mm-hmm. in the recruiting, and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth of everyone. It's a lack of leadership. It's a culture destroyer also. So if you're a leader out there and you don't tackle those elephants, you don't know where you stand, and you won't tackle the difficult conversations in advance, and you bring people in, they're going to see through it, and it's going to blow up in your face, and it's going to be a net negative rather mm-hmm. than a net positive. So let this be your call, your wake up call. If you're out there recruiting that way, stop it.
Yeah. I'll say this too. I mean, I think, you know, we talk about people move towards what they perceive as meaningful change. I think they move towards leadership is what they move towards. So, you know, when people start to think about, I want to recruit, how do I recruit? You know, we can get into build your avatar, build your list, hire this person, build this process, have an onboarding process. In the end of the day, you know, as a lead, you have to be a leader first. So as a leader, I think your primary role as a leader is to build that ecosystem that allows people to excel and produce at a high level and love doing it. You have to build that ecosystem. That comes with successes. That comes with, you know, successes all around, proven results, social proof that it's there. Mm-hmm. And then the people that you put them in contact with, they, you know, people can feel genuine or not, you know? So when you put a recruit in contact with people that genuinely are bought into the leadership, what you're doing as an organization, it's a different feel. So, you know, if you're a branch manager out there that is really thinking that you want to recruit, I'll tell you, start acting as if you have the sales team that you want in your avatar right now. Even if you don't have a single loan officer on your team, start conducting business that way. Start building the ecosystem that you think allows people to thrive, and then look to bring them into it. Don't think you're going to bring them in and create the ecosystem around it. They're looking to come into something that's proven, that's going to take them to a place that they're not at now. Meaningful change, more success. So focus. I think so many people just focus on, how do I bring people in? Focus on, how do you bring people in that you're not going to lose them when you bring them in? I think that's the bigger focus that organizations should have. You know, retention's bigger than recruiting. It's more important than recruiting in my mind. I don't know companies that don't recruit well if they also don't retain well, number one. But, and we said it all the time, I never want to be in a world of, we're bringing in as fast as we're losing. I'll stop the show we won't recruit another person and we'll fix this shit, you know, because something's broken. And you really have to realize your ecosystems is not what you know you think it is, or you want it to be. It's not proven.
Yeah, man, such good stuff here. We could keep going for another hour or two. There's other questions that I have. We're gonna have to hit a follow up session on this because we're out of time for today. Tom, thanks so much, man, for the valuable insight. This is something that is near and dear to our heart. It's something we live day in and day out and always striving to get better and just improve. So thanks so much for the time. Listen, everyone out there listening, if you have questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. Any feedback or, you know, anything that you want to challenge us on, I would love to have some dialogue on that. Obviously hit that, smash that like button and leave us a nice review. For Tom Mills, I'm Robert Filyaw on Lending Leadership with the Mortgage Pros. Y'all have a great day.
Have a great day. Thanks all.